Welcome to the Relational Grace Podcast, where we share the teachings of Pastor Nick Harris, who taught us that Christianity is not a religion, it's a relationship. I'm your host, Jamie Russell, Pastor Harris's son. Last episode, Pastor Harris taught about Absalom, the son of David, and his planned assault on the city of Jerusalem. He planned to surround the city, take it, and kill his father David, and ascend to the throne of Jerusalem. David had two options. He could stay and let Absalom's army lay siege and try to fight them off. And this would most likely meet the destruction of the city of Jerusalem, David's beloved city. Or he could flee and go to a place that Absalom might have difficulty trying to find him. It broke David's heart, but with limited choices, David chose the second option, which we learned in the last episode. Fleeing his beloved city and betrayed by members of his family, including one of his best friends and best counselors, and it broke David's heart and was a very humbling moment in his life. But at this moment, God chose to act, and he sent a Gentile, who was a friend and swore fealty. He swore to go with David till death. He told David that he believed in him, and he was his friend. That kind of love and friendship at David's worst time strengthened him on this journey ahead, and he began to have hope. With that, David left the city and climbed to the Mount of Olives, to his ultimate destination. Somewhere along his ascent, David looked back at the city, and he wept. About this time, he was approached by Ziba, servant of Saul, who brought him donkeys laden with supplies for his journey. With this, David made his way across the Jordan River Valley. We saw here that all things that David had been through had begun to soften his heart and gave him a new level of tenderness and gentleness and love for the Lord. And from these, we see some of David's most amazing psalms. And one of these was the glorious 63rd Psalm. That's where we finished the last episode. But there is a test coming in this episode. Somewhere in the far side of the Mount of Olives, a man came running towards David. His name was Shimei, and he would test David to the core. And that is what Pastor Harris will talk about in this episode. So let's hear Pastor Harris explain the rest of the story here in the 18th episode of the Saga of David series titled, The Poison of an Unforgiving Spirit.
Well, Andrew's just introduced us to a man whose name was Shimei. Say that with me, Shimei. An important name. Now, I can tell you without flinching that this man, Shimei, was a prize jerk. Hello? I mean, I don't know how to say it any nicer than that. He's just a prize jerk. He was a Benjaminite from the house of Saul, and he had hated David ever since David put the crown of Israel on his head 3 decades earlier. He hated David, and he had been waiting for 30 years to see David get his. And now, it had finally happened. In fact, when Shimei heard the news that David had been driven from Jerusalem, he was literally beside himself with joy. Shimei planned, he said, I'm going out to see this guy because I'm going to stuff it in his face. So he took a shortcut so that he could intercept David before David could cross the Jordan. He wanted to mock David. He wanted to humiliate him. He even wanted to speak some curses over him, like may your nose grow to 15 feet and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? He just wanted to see David suffer. So as David approached the Jordan, here was this jerk. You don't mind if I say that, do you? When you hear the story, you're going to agree with me. As David approaches the Jordan, here was this jerk standing beside the road, reveling in David's misery and pain. And suddenly, he is just so overcome with emotions, he is so beside himself, that he goes temporarily insane. And he flew into a wild rage, and he picked up stones, and he started throwing them at David. Now, David's blowing up without somebody standing there throwing stones at him. Now, listen to me. This guy must have been a few French fries short of a happy meal. Because David was not alone when Shimei began to throw his stones. You see, David was accompanied at the time by Ittai and his band of warriors, plus a number of David's mighty men. They were all around David. They were standing on all sides of the king, protecting him. Now, unless Shimei was the worst shot in the world, a few of these stones must have hit these crack warriors. And hitting them with stones could get you killed deader than a doornail. But the danger didn't deter Shimei. He was far too gone. He was beside himself. He was so full of hate, so full of rancor that he continued to throw stones and to take verbal and physical jabs at David. And finally, as his rage finally began to abate, he screamed these words at David. He said, "Get out! Get out, you man of bloodshed, you worthless fellow! The Lord has returned upon you all the bloodshed of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned." Now, beloved, not a single one of those accusations are true. David had not murdered any of the members of Saul's household. He had no blood on his hands. In fact, he was not even in the country. Remember when Saul and his sons were killed on Mount Gilboa? He was over with the Philistines. He wasn't even there. And it was the household of Saul that had started the civil war, in which so many men, women, and children were killed, including many of Saul's household. And David did show mercy. He said, "You showed no mercy to the household of Saul." That's not true. He did show mercy. In fact, David even made Mephibosheth, one of Saul's grandsons, a member of his own household. And furthermore, David had not stolen the throne of Israel. Remember? He hadn't stolen. It was all God's doing. God is the one who had Samuel come and anoint him. This was not any doings on David's part. It was God working. It was God who took Saul's throne. The book of Samuel is very clear about that. Now, beloved, here's what I want you to see in all of this. As Andrew indicated to us in his introduction, something had happened to David. In those days, just preceding, he was changed. He was different. Something inside him had been altered. We can see that in his reaction to this stone-throwing, cursing man Shimei. You know what the old David would have done? That old David would have ordered his mighty men to kill this lunatic. "Get that guy, cut his head off." That's what David would have done. After all, it would have been easy to do. Shimei was totally defenseless against David's armed protectors. And this man, all he could do was throw rocks. But here's the thing. This David is different. This David did not choose to have him killed. He reacted with mercy. He was calm. So what is it that happened to him? What had changed? I think I know what had happened. Humiliation and defeat had caused David to reclaim his spiritual heritage. He had reached out and grabbed a hold of something he'd lost. You see, David now begins to look like the man we saw in the caves of En-Gedi. David had begun to look like the man who had repented for having even touched the robe of an anointed king. Now this much I know. Shimei had better thank his lucky stars that this transition had occurred. Otherwise he would have been dead. Think about it. Some fleshly aggressive men were standing around David that day. I mean, those mighty men were not paragons of virtue. They were some tough motor scooters. And those guys associated, I'm telling you, with Ittai were tougher than a bunch of nails. They were all there. And they weren't spiritual. Now, one of those fleshly men was David's new political advisor, this man named, a man whose name was Abishai. Now, he wanted something done with this foul man right there on the spot. In a snit of temper, Abishai turned around to David and he said, "Let me kill him with my own hands." As a matter of fact, this is the quote. "Why should this dead dog..." I mean, he starts out on a high note, doesn't he? "Why should this dead dog be allowed to curse my lord the king? Let me go over now and cut off his head." So what does David choose to do in this situation? Better ask, what do you and I do in this situation? Now I want you to think about this a minute. Well, I know myself. And I know what I would have been tempted to do. I'd have said, "Abishai, take him out behind that next hill and do him." Let's put it into this. After all, now think about this. This fellow had insulted me. Me. Listen, if a guy would insult somebody as wonderful as I am, he probably deserves to die, right? I mean, just think about how glorious I am. But, beloved, when we've been with God, our reaction and our response to circumstances change. I would have been Abishai at one time in my life. I can assure you of that. But that's no longer the case. And you know why? I've spent some time with God. I've seen my God face to face. I've watched the way He works. I understand Him when He speaks to me. Beloved, when we've been with God, like David had in his dark night of the soul, we know the foolishness of that kind of reaction. It's actually very silly. If we listen closely, we hear our Lord speak these words. Love your enemy. Bless them that curse you. Do good to them that hate you. Pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. Those are tough words, are they not? Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, pray for them which despitefully use you. You've got to have a different kind of heart. You can't have the natural man's heart and do these things. And David, through his trials, through his dark night of the soul, has now been transformed. There's healing now in the heart of David rather than wounding. The king had renewed his relationship with God. He had spent some quality time with his Lord. And as I told you last week, David wrote some of his greatest psalms as he was riding that donkey into the wilderness of Judea. So at this point, with Shimei throwing his stones, screaming, yelling, frothing at the mouth, accusing him, he chose not to take the offensive. Now let me say this. What do we do when someone provokes us? Well, let me say this. Our response to the provocation is totally up to us. God's not going to respond for us. God's not going to step in. It is up to us how we choose to respond. We must choose how we respond to the personal attacks of others upon our lives. As I said, it's our choice. We can get mad, and we can retaliate when someone affronts us, like those two young men who shot up the fraternity party in Cleveland, Ohio last week. Did you read about that? They got rowdy at a party, were asked to leave. They considered this to be an affront to their dignity. So they went to their cars, got guns, and killed two students. They got even, but they're going to spend the remainder of their lives in prison. In other words, retaliation, Jesus is right. He's just looking at things realistically because retaliation never works. It never makes things right. But it's up to us. We can respond if we choose to do so, but it achieves nothing. I'll never forget that day, as long as I live, when Jerry Jones, the new owner of the Dallas Cowboys, he's not new anymore, but he was new then, chose to fire the legendary coach of the Dallas Cowboys, Tom Landry. When the firing was announced, you may remember this, a reporter for the Dallas Morning News approached the great man and asked him what he thought about Jerry Jones and his decision. Well, Landry looked at this reporter, and he told the reporter, said, I haven't thought about it a lot. And then he said to him, I'm not responsible for what Jerry Jones does or what he does not do. I'm only responsible for how I respond to what he does or does not do. And I have chosen to forget it. Now, who do you think went to bed that night feeling the best about himself? Tom or Jerry? I kind of think that Tom probably slept all night long, and Jerry probably rolled and tossed. You see, Tom chose to respond in a godly way. He chose not to retaliate. Now, here's how David chose to respond. It's found in 2 Samuel chapter 16, verses 10 through 12, and it reads this way. But the king says, what have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? Let him curse. He's talking here to Abishai, who wants to kill this guy. He said, let him curse, because the Lord has said to him, curse David. Who then shall say, why have you done so? And David said to Abishai and all his servants, see how my son, who came from my own body, seeks my life. How much more may this Benjaminite? Let him alone. Let him curse. For the Lord has ordered him. He said, look, our God is sovereign. Our God is it. There's something happening here that I need to learn. I'm not going to learn it by killing people. He said, I got problems enough. My own son has rebelled against me. Now, do I need this on my conscience too? No, I do not. Ooh, there's something about that that's just regal. isn't there? In fact, what David was saying here was this. Abishai, let me tell you something. I've made some horrible mistakes lately. I know that. And you know that I don't want to make another mistake. What if God told this man to come and curse me, and then I allowed you to kill him? I'd only add to my history of bad decisions, right? Of course he's right. David knew that adding one more mistake to his resume would only compound his problems, not eradicate them. So David then said this to Abishai. If I don't choose to respond to this unprovoked attack, maybe the Lord will return good to me. Isn't that beautiful? David might have even said, now listen carefully because I'm going to misquote deliberately. Don't think I don't understand it. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can only wound my pride. Right? Now, let's face it. Most of the time, the things that other people say about us does just that. It may wound our pride, may bruise our egos. It doesn't do anything other than that. In fact, I found that many of the negative things that people say about me is so close to the truth that it terrifies me. I think that's the reason I get so angry, as I see the truth in it. Nobody has ever said anything nasty to me that wasn't deserved, I don't think, in my entire life. That's why I react the way I do. It's probably true. Think about this. If we're right about something, and we know we're right, what does it matter what other people say about us? Now just really think about that for a moment. Does it matter? You see, to refuse to react is a sign of maturity. Cutting off somebody's head isn't. I don't care what you say, that's not mature. Seeing an old head laying over here and a body over here, there's nothing mature about that. As I see things, David had begun to mature spiritually. It had taken a long time, but it was finally happening. Now, so here we got this guy. Won't you? Now, can you see this picture? He's over here. David and his men, they're over there having this discussion about this guy. And he's winding down. I'm sure he's saying to himself, now, you stupid jerk. What did you think you were doing? Those guys over there are all armed. They've got armor. You're standing here throwing rocks at these guys. Are you out of your mind? Well, there's something interesting about this story. Do you know how it turned out? Have you ever wondered what happened to Shimei? Well, I do. But here's the good news. The Bible tells us. It usually does that. After Absalom's revolt was quelled, and it will be quelled, guess who appeared before David one day? You guessed it. Shimei. And guess what? He's singing a different tune. You know, it's like the old Connie Francis song. Kids, you don't know who she is. Don't sit there and trouble your brain with it. She once sang a song entitled, Who's Sorry Now? Old Abishai is standing there singing this solo. He's got his keyboard out there. And he's singing, Who's Sorry Now? Who's Sorry Now? So, listen to his words in 2 Samuel 19:19-20. Listen to this. Then he said to the king, do not let my Lord impute iniquity to me. Or remember what wrong your servant did on the day that my Lord the king left Jerusalem, that the king should take it to heart. Next verse. For I, your servant, know that I have sinned. Therefore, here I am, the first to come today of all the house of Joseph to go down and meet my Lord the King. I was wrong, David. You were right. My response was not right. Yours was. Here's a repentant man asking for forgiveness. So what will David do? He's been restored. He's no longer down and out. He's sitting on his throne now and he's in his throne room. So what will David do? Well, good old Abishai, David's new political counselor, hadn't changed at all. He leans over to David. See, he's standing on David's right hand. Leans over to him. Kill the jerk. Shimei deserved it. He really did. And Abishai knew it. But David now understood from his own past mistakes that without the grace of God, without divine forgiveness, he would have died as a murderer himself. That's where that song we sang this morning comes in. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. When you recognize the magnitude of what that means, you then begin to have an urgency to begin to share that grace with others. So David looked down at Shimei. He's sitting on his throne. Shimei's on his knees in front of him. And he said to him, Shimei, you shall not die. In fact, David swore to Shimei that he would not kill him. Now, there were two reasons for David's choice, as we've already seen. In the first place, he knew that God is just. God will address all wrongs. So David chose to leave the offense against him in the hands of God. That's so smart. That is wisdom. And in the second place, he was aware of his own failure. You know, what I'm saying is this. David was a man who had been humbled. Don't you like David better now? I like this, David. He just looks bigger to me. I look at him, and when he looks down and says, you shall not die. When his counselors are saying one thing to him, he says, get away from me. I'm forgiving this man. This is big. Being forgiving makes anyone look bigger. You know, when Jesus taught his disciples the Lord's Prayer, he told them to say this to God. Don't ever forget this. He said, forgive our trespasses, our sins, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Listen, we better not pray that prayer if we don't mean that and do that. That's pretty heavy. God, forgive me what I have done against you as I have forgiven what people have done against me. Ooh. But I can tell you this. If we forgive those who choose to sin against us, we will be bigger people for it, and God will bless us. In fact, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus addressed that very thing as we saw a moment ago in Matthew 5, 43 and 44. Now listen again. He said, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. And pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Does that take a big person? Here Jesus gives us four steps to living a powerful, overcoming, successful life. The first is to love and not hate your enemies. Talk about those people who abuse you. This is not easy to do, is it? Think of Joseph and Jacob. Do you remember his story? 10 of his brothers. Now, you want to hear somebody has a right to hate somebody? 10 of his brothers take him captive. And they sell him to a group of Midianite traders who take him to Egypt and sell him as a slave. And he spends 17 years unjustly in prison in Egypt for something he didn't do. For all 17 of those years, most of us would have set and plotted ways to get even with those 10 brothers. They had abused him in the most awful way imaginable, but by an act of the will, he chose to love those brothers. And when he became the second man in Egypt, he demonstrated his love for them. How did he do it? He took the second step that Jesus commanded. He blessed them who cursed him. You see, Joseph's brothers had cursed him because he was their father's favorite son. Remember, the father had given him a coat of many colors, and they were so jealous of him. And so they continually called him names and mocked him to his back. But when they were at the point of starvation, Joseph didn't mock them. He gave them food to eat. He saved their lives. He blessed them. Bless those who curse you, Jesus said. Then he took the third step. And even though his brothers had wronged him in their hatred, the day came when he gave to them the land and the rich Nile Delta to call their own. He said, you come up here. I'm the second man in Egypt. I'm second only to the Pharaoh. I give you the Nile Delta as your own, the best land in the nation. So he not only blessed them, he did good to them. And I'm sure that he prayed for his brothers who had used him so spitefully. So there's the four keys to abundant living. Listen again. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. Forgiveness, beloved, forgiveness. That is the key that unlocks the windows of heaven. It is a key we all need to possess. But to have it, we have to turn loose of all those things that we perceive that others have done to us. Now, why is this? It's because as long as we choose to hold on to these things, we will think of nothing else. Our minds are dominated by what we perceive as others having done to us. And when we do that, we lock ourselves into a past that we cannot change. You can't change the past. You can't change what somebody said to you 6 months ago or 5 years ago or what somebody did to you 6 months ago or 5 years ago or 30 years ago or, in my case, 70 years ago. It does me no good to go back and revisit parents that deserted me and left me alone, locked me in a house. I can't change that. It happened. And I'll either deal with it constructively or I will dwell on it. It will occupy my mind and it will reduce anything good about me. Now, beloved, I can tell you this without even flinching. It's impossible for us to have good emotional health while we are harboring bitterness, resentment, and unforgiveness. You can't do it. You can't do it. Look at that again. It's impossible for us to have good emotional health while we're harboring bitterness, resentment, and unforgiveness. You know, I've always believed that harboring unforgiveness is like drinking poison and then hoping your enemy will die. See, we poison ourselves by our resentment, and the people who did it to us don't care. Or they wouldn't have done it to us. Now, unforgiveness poisons everyone who holds on to it because it makes us bitter. And it's impossible to be bitter and get better at the same time. I made that up. Isn't that great? It's impossible to be bitter and get better at the same time. So, you're a lot like David. I'm a lot like David. If you're a victim this morning of abuse, you have a choice to make. You can let the hurts that others inflict on you make you bitter, or you can let it make you better. The decision was up to David, and the decision is up to you and me. It certainly made David a better person, and as we continue this series of sermons on the life of David, we're coming to an end in about the next 7 years. We'll see that forgiving Shimei was the first step in God restoring David to his throne. When David looked at that man and he said, "No, stop it, Abishai, don't you touch that man." That was his first step in recovery. He chose to ignore the actions of others. And it will be the first step in restoring you to wholeness. Remember, when somebody abuses you, it's much better to love them, bless them, do good for them, and pray for them than it is to strike back at them. It's God's way. It's God's way. And that's my teaching for this morning.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. If you want to help spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe too. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Don't forget to connect with Ariel Ministries on Facebook and Instagram and subscribe to our email list at arielministries.com. That's Ariel spelled A-R-I-E-L. We look forward to keeping you updated on upcoming episodes and projects. If you would like to support the missional efforts of Ariel Ministries in Tharaka, Kenya with Each One Feed One, we'd like to remind you that 10% of all donations to Ariel Ministries will support this missional effort. Visit arielministries.com/give for online donations and other methods of giving. To learn more about the Tharaka Mission, you can visit arielministries.com/missions. You can also listen to episode 26 for a deeper dive into how our relationship with Each One Feed One and the McCarter family started over 35 years ago, where we are today, and where we're headed in the future.